Weak frontal boundary is tracking across Illinois today. A mild air mass behind that front will allow temperatures to rise several degrees above average for this time of year. And even warmer temperatures are on tap for tomorrow. The region will see highs in the 40s and 50s tomorrow. The dry and warm weather pattern is expected to last into the weekend. High temperatures today will range from the low 30s in northern Indiana to near 50 degrees in western Missouri. Lows overnight tonight will drop into the low 20s to low 30s across the Midwest. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, sunny with a high in the low 40s. The wind from the west at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, mostly clear, the low 24. The wind will be out of the west at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, sunny. Look for a high of 47 with the wind from the southwest at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy, the low 34. The wind from the southwest around 10 miles per hour. Friday, mostly sunny. We'll see a high in the low 50s with the wind from the southwest at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Friday night and Saturday, mostly cloudy with the low Friday night in the low 30s and the high Saturday in the low 40s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana were in the low 30s to mid 40s, most locations reporting sunshine. At Rockford, 39 degrees. At O'Hare, 38. Bloomington, 41. At Mattoon, it was 43. Carbondale reported 45 degrees. 33 at South Bend. Lafayette, 41. At Indianapolis, 38. And Terre Haute reported 40 degrees at the top of the hour. Willard Airport had a sunny sky at noon. The temperature, 43 degrees. The dew point, 25. The relative humidity, 49%. The wind out of the west at 10. The barometric pressure, 29.97 and falling. And at 12:39, 43 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. The sky is sunny. A trial is getting underway today in one of the biggest public corruption cases Ohio has ever seen. Jimmy DeMora rose from sanitation worker to commissioner of Cuyahoga County, which includes Cleveland and its suburbs. He's accused of being at the center of a number of bribery schemes that federal investigators uncovered in recent years. Kevin Niedermeyer of member station WKSU tells us how it started.
It's May 2008, and the FBI in Cleveland is investigating a routine bribery case. The contractor they're interviewing casually mentions the name Jimmy DeMora. At the time, DeMora was one of the three exceedingly powerful commissioners who enjoyed expansive authority over the budget of Ohio's largest county. The contractor's comments sparked a wide-ranging federal investigation that only became public on July 28, 2008, when hundreds of federal agents raided the offices of county officials and private contractors. DeMora's home and office were among the first targets, but there were many more. In the last 3 years, more than 50 government officials, employees, private contractors, and even two judges have either been convicted or pleaded guilty in the case. Jimmy DeMora is charged with being a kingpin, running a Boss Tweed-style criminal enterprise out of the county's administration building. Prosecutors say he accepted home improvements, trips, appliances, meals, and even prostitutes in exchange for millions of dollars in county contracts. Before he was indicted last year, DeMora was mentioned in numerous court documents, but strongly denied any guilt.
I am innocent, and I will refute that 51-page information of packs of lies, innuendos, mistruths by three people that are in trouble, trying to get themselves less time.
One of those three people is former county auditor Frank Russo, DeMora's longtime friend and political ally. Russo pleaded guilty to bribery in September 2010 and has been testifying against other defendants, hoping to get his 21-year prison sentence reduced. Former federal prosecutor Jeffrey Mearns says the long sentences being given out to other defendants may have convinced DeMora to go before a jury.
It's not totally a surprise to me that Jimmy DeMora will not plead guilty, because apparently the number that the government is insisting on is just one that is unacceptable. It would, in effect, be a life time sentence.
The government will try to prove that DeMora was involved in a staggering number of conspiracies, more than 60 in all, and that getting almost anything done in Cuyahoga County required a little something for DeMora. His lawyers are expected to paint the gifts as normal activity among friends or as the way business is normally done. Case Western Reserve University law professor Lewis Katz says as far as the money that changed hands, this corruption case isn't a big deal, especially compared to those in Chicago, New Jersey, or New York. But he says the level of influence Jimmy DeMora and Frank Russo exerted over the courts, contractors, and county government departments was breathtaking.
The depth of the corruption in this case, not necessarily the money, is startling, shocking, and outrageous.
DeMora's trial is expected to last 3 months, and whatever its outcome, the corruption scandal that he's accused of leading has already made a lasting impact on Cuyahoga County. Last year, disgusted voters here scrapped their three-commissioner system, replacing it with a county executive and 11-member county council. For NPR News, I'm Kevin Niedermeyer.
It's 12:44. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. I'm Celeste Quinn. Judy Wiegand will become the Champaign School District's next permanent superintendent this year, succeeding Arthur Culver, who left Unit 4 more than 6 months ago. Wiegand is currently serving as interim superintendent. She says she wants to improve offerings in career and technical education and further develop the STEM initiative, which seeks to boost education in science, technology, engineering, and math. Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers recently spoke with Wiegand about her goals for the district. She began by outlining areas she wants to see added to Unit 4's strategic plan.
One of the first areas, of course, is achievement and well-being, and one of the indicators takes a look at student retention. What are we doing when it comes to those critical years, like, for example, ninth grade, and we take a look at students who earn enough credits in order to earn sophomore status? And what trend are we seeing? Are we seeing that we are decreasing the number of students who are not able to make sophomore status? We should be, because we have put a number of initiatives in at the ninth grade to help support students. So that's one piece. Another piece deals with diversity and taking a look at underrepresented student populations in honors courses, and not just the access piece, but what are the outcomes? Are students performing at the same level or close to what their peers are performing at? So those are just two specific areas that I've been involved with a lot. And so we certainly continue to take a look at what our outcomes are for our students in those areas.
I noticed in the strategic plan it doesn't mention anything about obesity, the obesity epidemic. Is that something that's missing?
We don't address the obesity epidemic, I think, specifically as a means of measure, but certainly concerned with the health and well-being of our students. I know there's initiative, for example, at Jefferson Middle School, we're taking a look at increased brain activity and how that's connected to physical activity. And the principal, Dr. Susan Zola, actually put in a few stationary bikes in her library, as well as a few exercise balls in the classrooms, so that students, instead of just going to the library and sitting on a chair or whatever, can also get on an exercise bike, and they actually have it fixed so that you can actually put your iPad on the bike itself and possibly go through and read a book that way too. So I think there's a lot of, and also I should mention that Carrie Busey has it as an initiative as well when it comes to the type of foods our students get during the day and making sure they get more fruits and vegetables from natural sources.
Now, as you know, Illinois just recently won $43 million from Race to the Top funding, huge amount of money, and it helped bolster education, science, math, engineering, technology. Some of the money will also be used to install the new Common Core state standards that have already been implemented in many other states. What are some of the noticeable differences that the public will see because of the Race to the Top funding, specifically in the Unit 4 schools?
I think it's too early to tell. I haven't received anything specifically from the state. I can certainly connect that to Common Core, and that we'll certainly see our students doing a lot more when it comes to higher order thinking, when it comes to especially writing in the curriculum. We're certainly going to see some significant changes in math curriculum, and that things that were maybe done in first and second grade will certainly be introduced earlier for students, especially also as well as in the middle level, where the expectation is that students will have exposure to algebraic concepts before they exit eighth grade.
Now, Arthur Culver, I know he was brought in to help fulfill the district's promises with the consent decree, and now that it's been lifted, wondering what will you do to make sure that the district doesn't lose ground on maintaining racial equality?
When it comes to all the initiatives that were associated with the consent decree, certainly want to continue to support those initiatives and maintain our focus on both equity and excellence. So taking a look at not just how our African-American students perform, but other student groups is not only about access, but outcomes. How are they performing to the overall general population? Certainly having to address the disparity between African-American students and discipline rates when compared to other students. So it stays on the agenda.
How would you assess the level of confidence and trust that the community has in the school district?
There is a lack of trust. We're probably one of the best-kept secrets when it comes to all the things that are taking place in our public schools, and we need to do a better job of getting the good news out as to what's taking place, as well as building those bridges with different members of the community and talking about what their concerns are, what their perceptions are, and opening up good two-way communication.
Incoming Unit 4 Superintendent Judy Wiegand, she spoke with Illinois Public Media's Sean Powers. To hear more of this interview, visit our website at will.illinois.edu.
Do you want to ensure that Illinois Public Media will be able to provide your children and grandchildren with the breadth of programs and services that you treasure? Leave your own legacy for them by making a gift through your estate. It's simple and it's easy. What a difference you can make to future generations. Simply call Donda Beard at 217-333-7300 or go online for more information at will.illinois.edu/support.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 4th of January, 2012. Today's the birthday of Sir Isaac Newton, born in Woolsthorpe, England, 1643, born prematurely on a farm, his father having died 3 months before. Newton was brought up to take over the farm, but he wasn't a good farmer, and his uncle suggested that he go to college instead, and so he did. He went to Cambridge, and when the school shut down during a plague year, Newton went home, studied mathematics and physics on his own, and it was then that he developed his theories of gravity and optics. Returned to Cambridge to teach mathematics, his first great achievement, the invention of a reflecting telescope.